Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I have a kind of unusual show in some ways today, and I want to thank the folks that have been listening to the archives. I'm glad there's interest in the Myra information. It's very practical when you dive into some of this stuff, and I've got some very practical down-to-the-earth information for you today. And we'll start out in Contact Report 216, and I'm going to talk about wisdom teeth, believe it or not. It's kind of a long story, but I never had my wisdom teeth taken out. I can remember back when I was 18, 19 years old, going into my dentist's office, and I didn't realize it, but he had had an accident with some mercury since the last time I had seen him. And it was really shocking. Yeah, the mercury had really caused big problems. And I just remember the shock at his appearance and patches of his hair missing in various places and weirdness in his skin. And it just was so shocking. Very traumatizing to me as well. Here I am about 18... I don't know, maybe 17, 18 years old. I can't remember exactly. And he comes in, and then he left the room. He had somewhere to go to do something, to get something. I don't remember, but I ran out of the office, to tell you the long story. The truth of it, I left and got out of there, and I never went back. So, and this ties into our whole study of logic and everything. Because, and remember in the book, The Might of the Thoughts, we've been talking about learning to be an independent thinker. And I guess I was a bit of an independent thinker even at a young age. My father was a very independent thinker. And just because you're an independent thinker doesn't mean you're right always. But I couldn't see any logic in just ripping these teeth out that were giving me no problem whatsoever. And I ran across something in the Meyer material about wisdom teeth that I thought I would share with you. And Billy asked the following question in Contact Report 216. He asked this to Quetzal. Billy says, "Then I have a question in reference to wisdom teeth. If you can give me an answer to it, our scientists say that wisdom teeth of modern man are unnecessary leftovers from prehistoric man's time and are absolutely unnecessary today. Is that right? Quetzal says, wisdom teeth are a necessity for humans. Because if these are missing, then the food is no longer chewed properly and is only crushed poorly. However, especially the chewing and the crushing of food are necessary and are of great significance and importance for the stomach and the intestines and for the digestive processes and thus for the breaking down and the burning of food. Well-chewed and crushed foods facilitate these processes quite tremendously. The front teeth, the biting teeth, the tearing teeth, are not sufficient for the chewing process and the crushing process, which is why these functions are assigned to the molars. And these include the so-called wisdom teeth. If the food isn't chewed properly and is crushed poorly, then health problems will arise from this in the course of time, which can spread to and affect the stomach as well as the intestines and even the immune system, which appears with many people on earth without them knowing what is the cause of their suffering. Stomach ulcers as well as intestinal ulcers are fairly often a result of a lack of quality with regard to the chewing and the crushing of food. Even the earthly physicians have so far gained no insights into this. Indeed, by them and the scientists, it is even accepted erroneously that wisdom teeth are left over from the early days of the earth, but this corresponds to a misconception beyond compare. Thus, even we, who are not only superior to the people of the earth in consciousness, but also in physical evolution, have wisdom teeth, of course, because these are, in fact, vitally necessary. If humans are missing these teeth, then health problems, as I said, can appear. Now, I've recently had some real sensitivity in my teeth that I'm currently trying to address. And I've come across a book that is just so eye-opening and amazing that I have to share it with you. It's called Cure Tooth Decay, Heal and Prevention of Cavities with Nutrition. His name is Ramiel Nagel, and the foreword is written by Timothy Gallagher, a dentist. Well, as luck would have it, this dentist had also an accident with mercury, as did my dentist when I was a kid. So let me read a little bit from this foreword. And it's funny, we're talking about teeth in reference to the Meyer information. Okay, this is Dr. Timothy Gallagher. Finally, a doctor found that I was suffering from acute mercury toxicity. I had to have all of my mercury fillings carefully removed, followed by over 25 intravenous chelations to remove the remaining mercury from my body. Can you imagine how traumatic that would be? 25. From the moment I had to practice dentistry in a different way. Most of the mercury-free dentists I know became mercury-free only because after they had suffered the effects of mercury poisoning themselves. In placing and drilling all those fillings, dentists are continually exposed to mercury vapors. But the conventional belief held by most dentists is that mercury is not problematic, and they continue to say and teach that it is safe. I used to be one of those dentists until I became ill. That's Dr. Timothy Gallagher, and he goes on, and we will certainly, hopefully, read more from that forward in the future. But the author of this book, Ramiel Nagel, the reason he got into this is because of his daughter developed a tooth problem. And he started doing research, and it led from one thing to another. And anyway, Ramael says, I observed that our one-year-old daughter had a small light brown spot on the top of her tooth, front tooth, and I wasn't sure if the spot was a cavity or not. And then he goes on to say later on this page, can you imagine what a dental treatment would be like to a toddler? A one-and-a-half-year-old child cannot sit still for a dentist and would not be able to understand the ordeal that she was being put through. The typical dentist treatment prescribed for young children with many cavities that involves surgery under general anesthesia. So, what I am going to do, again, the title of this book is Cure Tooth Decay by Ramael Nagel, N-A-G-E-L, Ramael, R-A-M-I-E-L. You can get it from his website, or you can get it from Amazon. His website is www.curetoothdecay.com, and I'm going to play a clip from a movie that he has on YouTube that says Cure Cavities and Repair Tooth Decay Naturally. And I'm going to just let this play for a while, and hopefully this will be helpful to people later that will listen to this show. I've just been reading this book. And I've listened to this video I don't know how many times. So I'll let Ramael tell the story, and we'll cue this up. Okay, just give me a second. Here we go.
I wrote this book and I made this presentation to help you heal tooth cavities naturally. I ask that you experience an influx of divine grace and the feeling of connection by listening to this or watching this presentation. I ask that you not only hear my words, but that you feel deeply moved and inspired to make a change for the better. Good news! Your tooth cavities can heal. Let me give you a few examples of people who have healed their tooth cavities.
Who are you?
I'm Mike Young. I never had any cavities as a kid. My teeth were really strong. And then later on in my 20s, I had a toothache. And I went to the dentist, and he said I had 4 or 5 cavities, and I didn't have any pain then either. And then about 5 years later, I had tremendous, tremendous tooth pain. And he said, you've got 2 teeth that need emergency root canal. And he showed me the x-rays and the cavity. As I remember, it went all the way down to the pulp. So intense that he couldn't even do those root canals. He needed to send me to a root canal specialist, and I needed to go within 2 weeks. To make a long story short, I found Rami on the internet, searching YouTube, and I found his book, the Cure Tooth Decay book. I started on the protocol in the book, and I started eating things like heart and liver and taking fermented cod liver oil, and I cut out all grains and sugars. Believe it or not, within 2 days, the pain was almost gone. I could not believe it. Here I was, with massive tooth pain, being told I needed emergency surgery on my mouth or nothing else would work. And I actually asked that dentist, is there anything I can do to remineralize my teeth? And he said, no. I have not been back to the dentist since. That'll be 2 years in November. And there is a hole in my tooth that I can see, and it's getting smaller. I can feel it getting smaller with my tongue. Well, the book gave me the information in it, the simple information of what to eat and what not to eat. It was like so incredibly simple. You know, it just gave a whole different paradigm about why our teeth decay and about why they tend towards health. And that if we take the steps that nature intended and that humanity and humans have been doing for, you know, tens of thousands of years, that it's natural that our teeth are healthy.
Hi, my name is Maria, and I'm the creator of thegreensmoothiechallenge.com, and I was eating a raw vegan diet for about 2 years, and probably about a 95% raw vegan diet, and I felt amazing for about a year. My health just kept getting better, my energy level, I lost weight, I felt my skin was beautiful. Everything was going really well. And then after about a year, the tooth really started hurting. So I realized that something wasn't right. I really thought I was eating the healthiest diet on the planet. But I came to the conclusion, even though I was promoting a raw vegan diet, that this might not be the healthiest way for me to be eating. And right about the time I was realizing that, a friend of mine said, you have to read a book called Cure Tooth Decay by Ramil Nagel. And I ordered it from the library right then. And I opened it and started reading it. And right away, I made myself some bone broth. I got some raw butter. And I got some cod liver oil and started doing those right away. And within 2 days, my tooth wasn't hurting anymore. And within 2 weeks of starting to follow Ramil's suggestions, it was very difficult for me. I started adding in animal products into my diet. I started drinking some raw milk kefir, eating some organ meats. And within 2 weeks, my skin was gorgeous. My energy was back. It had only taken 2 days for my tooth to stop hurting. I am so thankful that I found this book. I tell everybody about this that has any sort of tooth issues, or even if they're getting some ridges in their nails or anything, I just tell them about this, and people thank me and hug me and feel like they have hope again for their health. So I hope you have the same experience.
I started investigating tooth cavities when my daughter, at the age of about 1.5, started to have spots on her teeth. The white spots quickly turned brown. In the worst point, one of her teeth just crumbled apart. I felt distraught and hopeless, and I didn't know what to do. When I called the dentist to ask for what kind of treatments they had for a little child, I found those treatments completely unacceptable. I knew there must be another way, and so I began my quest to find the cure for tooth cavities. What you're about to see is the result of 6 years of successful research. A woman phoned her dentist when she received a huge bill. I'm shocked, she complained. This is 3 times what you normally charge. Yes, I know, said the dentist, but you yelled so loud you scared away 2 other patients. The reality is most of us, not all of us, but most of us are afraid of the dentist. And there's a good reason why. It's because your body is giving you a message. It is telling you, I do not want my teeth surgically drilled into. Let's look at what modern dentistry does. On your left, you see a tooth before drilling. The red arrow points to a black spot. That's a small cavity. The dentist drills a hole in your tooth and takes out that black spot to prevent bacteria for making holes in your teeth. You can see on the picture on the right a similar tooth after drilling. You can see that quite a large hole is typically drilled for what looks to be a small cavity. A dental student wrote me and said the following. As a dental student, I drill teeth every week. I'd rather say that I have to do this to pass my exam. When I see my patients sitting on the dental chair with their eyes closed, I feel for them because they are losing good tooth structure forever. Once the dentist places a drill in your teeth, there's really not much hope of restoring what was drilled away. After drilling comes the next stage, filling. One of the most popular composite fillings has reacted negatively to over 90% of the people. On average, 50% of the people have immune system reactions to plastic composites. And kind of in the corner of the picture there, you can see mercury fillings, which, as you hopefully know, those are dangerous and toxic. First there's drilling, then there's filling. What comes next? Billing. And that's probably an accurate estimate there of what a dental treatment costs. So the question I have for you is, does drilling, filling, and billing, is that a successful treatment paradigm? Well, let's look at the evidence. The average modern filling material, composite or mercury, lasts on average 5 to 12 years. Amalgam and gold fillings are not bonded to the tooth. So there's a piece of metal in the tooth and it's just floating there. What happens is the modern system of dentistry, it's not a long-term solution because after 5 to 12 years, you're going to have a new dental treatment in place. And what most dentists don't tell you, but it is common knowledge, is that when there's a mercury filling placed in the tooth, those are the teeth that later need crowns and root canals. And the reason is because there's so much stress put on the tooth from having a hole drilled in it and then metal placed in it that the tooth over time becomes weak and damaged. So the answer to the question is no, modern dentistry does not cure cavities. It's simply a temporary treatment for a significant problem. Another problem with modern dentistry is what is called extension for prevention. A dentist by the name of G.V. Black, who pioneered modern mercury fillings, found out that if you drill a bigger hole and create a wedge shape in the tooth, that the mercury filling lasts longer. But the problem is that many dentists are trained to drill out much more tooth material than is actually decayed. So modern dentistry is a surgical form of treating tooth cavities that removes a lot of our natural tooth. So when I ask you, are you afraid of the dentist? Or you might feel afraid of going to the dentist. The reason is because your body knows that something wrong is about to happen. Now, dentistry is focused on removing bacteria as a means to cure cavities. Let's look at the stages of modern dentistry. First, they tell you to brush to remove the bacteria. When that fails, you must use mouthwash. Some of the mouthwash is toxic, fluoride rinses, for example. And when that fails, the bacteria have infested too deeply in your tooth, so the dentist says, okay, you know what? The only solution for you is to drill the bacteria out, which we learned about just with the drilling and filling and billing model. When the drilling, filling, and billing model fails, then you see in that next picture what's required for the tooth is a root canal where they try to take out the infection of the tooth by removing the inside, the pulp, the nerve, the blood supply of the tooth and pulling it out and putting a synthetic material in there all to remove the bacteria. When root canals fail, what's left is an implant.
Okay. I know this is a bit of a digression in a sense, but in another way, I think it really goes along with the typical topic of this show, which is the Meyer information and seeing, I like to see where it corresponds to science. And, you know, we live, and I know I've said this many times before, in a time called the third millennium. And in the third millennium, it's a time of confusion and maliciousness. And we live in what's called a consciousness-conditioned tyranny. And the tyranny is suppressing information. It's suppressing truth. So we live in a society where truth is suppressed. There are a lot of different forces that go on suppressing truth or distorting truth or giving you a half-truth. So we have to be independent thinkers in order to find the real truth, because there's so much motivation in terms of money and making money. And so the dentistry model that we have today is much like the model that we have for health in general, which is a corporate model designed to maximize profits and not necessarily find the root cause of problems. I want to tell you about a guy named Weston Price. There's so much in this book we find useful, and this will relate back to the people of Switzerland and the Meyer information here in a second as well. In 1915, a prominent dentist, Weston Price, was appointed as the first research director of the National Dental Association. Well, he did research, and this guy, Weston Price, he was in charge of the whole National Dental Association. Well, they sure wouldn't have him in charge today, because he did a lot of real independent research and independent thinking. And he wrote of people who didn't even use toothbrushes. these people were immune to tooth decay. And it says all these groups having a liberal supply of minerals, particularly phosphorus, and a liberal supply of fat-soluble activators, had 100% immunity to dental cavities. Dr. Price's fascinating field studies of people that were immune to tooth decay. The first thing he found out is lack of nutrition is the cause of physical degeneration. And this is the key with our teeth, the key with our physical health. Dr. Weston Price realized that something was fundamentally wrong with the way we live, and he set out to explore the world to find out what it was. During the 1930s, Dr. Price was able to document the sharp decline in health experienced by previously healthy people who came into contact with modern civilization. Remember, from our studies from the Goblet of Truth, it talks about, well, we live in an insane society that's running headlong to their own destruction. The Goblet of Truth explains that we live in a neo-capitalistic society that's influenced by neo-capitalism and fascism, and that we live in a consciousness-conditioned tyranny. Our whole society, if you trace it back to the Roman Catholic Church and the auto de fe and the burning of people at the stake, there's a dark order now that's seeking to control all the money and is taking away people's rights of self-determination. And the people are becoming indolent and obtuse, and that's why I urge people to learn independent thinking. So this whole society is an aberration now. The Meyer material explains that our whole society is not really a civilization. It's an aberration of a real civilization. We don't function under the creational natural law of love. We are mostly motivated towards profit and materialism. And this causes real distortion in certain areas like dentistry and medicine, because really the goal is profit. Well, back in 1915, 1920, 1930, Dr. Weston Price was able to document a sharp decline in health experience by previously healthy people when they started to come into contact with our modern civilization. And he published a book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. Along with telling photographs, it brings home the important fact that our modern food and lifestyle are the primary causes of tooth decay. I want to tell you about the people of a valley in Switzerland called the Löwenschental Valley. In 1931 and 1932, Dr. Price traveled to the remote Löwenschental Valley in the Swiss Alps. The people of the valley lived in harmony with nature, just what the Meyer material explains that we should be doing. We should be living in harmony with nature. What do I constantly repeat? The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And love is the highest principle in creation, and everything follows that principle in absolute logic. Well, these people were living in this primitive way in harmony with nature, which resulted in a seemingly peaceful existence. They had no police. In the Löwenschental Valley, they had no doctors. They had no need of a doctor. They had no dentists. Dr. Price wrote of the superior character and health of these people. Remember, the might of our own thoughts, the neutral positive thinking process, the living close to nature, to following the creational natural laws of love, not a romantic love, but a wisdom-conditioned love, a stable love. Dr. Price wrote the superior character and health of these people in the sublime lands of the isolated valleys in the remote Swiss Alps. And here's what Dr. Price, Weston Price, said. He says, they have neither physician nor dentist because they have so little need for them. They have neither policemen. They had no jail. They had no policemen because they had no need for it. The harmony was also evident in their food. And listen to what Dr. Price wrote here. While the cows spend the warm summer on the verdant knolls and wooded slopes near the glaciers and fields of perpetual snow, they have a period of high and rich productivity of milk. This cheese contains the natural butterfat and minerals of the splendid milk and is a virtual storehouse of life for the coming winter. And there's a reverend here, Reverend John Segan, the pastor of one church in the valley, told Dr. Price about what he called the divine characteristics of butter and cheese made from the milk of the grazing cows. Well, what happened in Switzerland, as the modernized districts of Switzerland came in contact with modern lifestyle and modern foods, their teeth started to decay rapidly. And you can see the pictures of the children from the Lohenschenthal Valley with perfect teeth, and they show their teeth, and then the horrible teeth of these other kids. Okay, here we go. In the modernized districts of Switzerland, tooth decay is rampant. The girl, upper left, is 16, and the one to the right is younger. They use white bread and sweets liberally. The two children below have badly formed dental arches with crowding of the teeth, and this deformity is not due to heredity. So their teeth were actually deforming. Anyway, it goes on. It's an absolutely stunning, revealing book. I had no idea it was going to have this intersection, you know, with the people of Switzerland. And I went out to the Wikipedia to look at the Lohenschenthal Valley in Switzerland, and I urge you to do this because it's one of the most beautiful places that you'll ever see in the world, and it's just stunning. So we are an insane society rushing headlong to our own destruction. And Elizabeth Moosbrugger wrote this in The Might of Thought. She wrote the foreword. She says, so the book which lies before you is dedicated to a humankind that is ill in its consciousness, so that it finds again the creational natural ways which it lost so long ago. So we've lost the creational natural way of eating. The creational natural way of eating involves animal products. It involves a diet that's high in calcium, high in phosphorus, where we eat liver, hearts, other organ meat, cheeses, butter, whole milk, raw milk's even better if you can get it. It's illegal now. We can't even get raw milk. It's illegal. It's all part of this consciousness conditioned tyranny. And part of what I'm urging people to do is learn to think independently. Because Billy says that the evolution of the consciousness can only come about through independent thinking of each human being. And Billy warns that our thinking on this planet is stunted because we have a consumer society. Everything is pre-chewed up. Television, radio, newspapers, magazines, books, they all tell you what to think. And people are no longer able to think independently. And Askett explained that that's one of the reasons why the Pleiaren, the Timmers, they speak to the people of the earth with prophecies. And she says, the human here on earth is not capable of fully coping with and fully understanding the truth. And he is not yet mature enough to know his future. and to approach it correctly. For that reason, the truth must be rewritten prophetically for him as in equations in order to make him think independently, where he slowly finds and recognizes the truth. Well, there's a truth in the Meyer information. It's called the effective truth. And the effective truth is the truth that leads to productivity in your life. In other words, we have to learn that we are responsible for our life personally. Not only that, you have the ability and the power to take control of the circumstances in your life. Your neutral positive thoughts, you need to nurture them because your consciousness is kind of like a garden. If you let it alone and don't nurture good thinking, well, you'll have these weeds that pop up. You need to clarify your thoughts. You need to repeat your thoughts. And that will take away the confusion. If you repeat things again and again and again, you'll start to see relationships that you didn't see before. If you let these bad thoughts, if these negative thoughts, if you let them repeat, they'll be like wildly growing weeds in your garden. You need to learn how to stop thinking. One of the great skills that meditation teaches is to learn to stop thinking. Because if you don't stop thinking, you'll have negative repeating thoughts. And the reason we have psychically disturbed human beings that can only think negatively, they can only think in terms of black on black, their perceptive ability becomes very limited into a narrow framework. Because, see, we even have something called unconscious thoughts. Think about that. You have thoughts that you're completely unaware of. And sometimes these thoughts, boom, they affect your consciousness. And we can fall prey to psychological disorders because of our thoughts. If we rotate negative thoughts, unhealthy thoughts, you have to develop the skill of identifying your unhealthy thinking. You have your own unhealthy thinking. I have my own healthy thinking. We have to practice self-cognition. Now, it explains that the human being can be shaken and knocked about by the circumstances of his life as long as you believe yourself to be helpless in regard to the creation of external conditions and influences. The opposite is the effect. Your neutral positive thinking will lead to healthy feelings then will lead to healthy habits, will lead to healthy circumstances in your life. If you have healthy circumstances, you have healthy habits, you can start to form these images, these consciousness images. You will start to visualize and improvements in your life. And if you add enthusiasm and effort to that visualization, that can lead to reality, big changes in your life. You are the Lord and Master of your life. You have to practice self-control. You have to take up self-examination and let appropriate self-control grow. Nurture neutral positive thoughts. That means to cherish. That means to train. That means to educate. You have to train yourself. It's like raising children. It's like raising kittens. It's like taking care of your pets, your dogs, yourself. You have to nurture your consciousness. If you don't, there's all kinds of pitfalls that can come about. You can fall into addictions. Your thoughts can run wild, out of control. You can start to make bad decisions. And you'll become in a state of self-induced misery. You need to learn to control your thoughts. And be aware that you also have unconscious thoughts. This is what it says here in the Mighty Thoughts book. And furthermore, it is a fact that while the human beings wants the good and positive, he is constantly prevented exactly the achievement of the good and positive because they have wrongly steered their thoughts. The human being maintains wishes, hopes, yearnings, which in no way agree with the good and the positive and do not harmonize with them. You see, neutral positive thinking harmonizes with the universal consciousness. Remember, the Meyer information says there is not a God in the religious sense of the word. We're personally responsible for our own evolution. Our spirit form is, you could think of it as a part piece of the creational universal consciousness itself. We live many, 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 many lifetimes, millions of lifetimes. But each time we manifest into the physical, we come back into the physical with the same spirit form, but with a new material consciousness, a new material body, a new personality. You're essentially a new person each time. But if you look in patterns, if you look in lines of reincarnation, there'll be consistencies, there'll be similarities. For example, Billy's line of reincarnation is, part of it is Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Now, those people were all prophets. They were teachers. They all taught, in fact, the teaching of the Spirit, which we study on this show. If you look at Plato, he was a great thinker. He was an independent thinker. He was in Greek times about the 4th century. Well, one of his next incarnations was Otto Heinrich Muck, who worked for the Nazis in the Peenemünde rocket research area. He invented 2,000 inventions. Again, a great thinker. You see the kind of the analogies. So, you have no reason to fear death. We reincarnate many, many times. We are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. And death is just the passage to rebirth. Rebirth into the world of pure spirit. When your spirit form leaves your body in the death process, we go into kind of this etheric energy band in another dimension that occupies the same space that we're in now. What also comes over is our consciousness block, which includes our conscious mind, our personality, our unconscious mind, our subconscious mind. And all that information from your past life is processed in an area that was created by your spirit form called the overall consciousness block. And those memories of your past life, those things you learn that are of evolutionary value, peace, love, truth, wisdom, harmony, are converted into a neutral positive form and stored in your spirit form. Stored, and they will, that wisdom will manifest itself again in your subconscious as part of the wisdom of your predecessor personality as you come back as a child again, whose material consciousness has to grow up again and learn. But you and I have probably had thousands of lifetimes. And at this point in our evolution as a stage two society, we really mostly don't have memories of these previous lives. It would be too confusing and very disturbing. It would take harmony out of our lives to start to reliving the traumas of the past and start to miss people that we knew in previous lifetimes. So one of the things that we have to learn is self-control. And one of the keys to self-control and harmony is learning to think logically and not to be too influenced by belief. we here on the earth are very influenced by belief instead of logic. Now, deductive reasoning is a part of logic. And there are a couple kinds of deductive reasoning. Logic is the use and study of valid reasoning. There's deductive and, in fact, inductive reasoning. And in deductive reasoning, you'll start out with a premise. For example, all men are mortal. Well, if that's your premise, and then you state Mark is a man, then you can really reach a conclusion. Therefore, Mark is mortal. So if A, then B. That's deductive reasoning. And deductive reasoning moves from something general to something specific. And this is a thinking skill. And that has nothing to do with belief or nothing to do with going along with the crowd. It's one of the skills of independent thinking. Now, in The Might of Thoughts, in page 276, it says, belief is based on wrong and negative thinking and in the rejection and displacement of reality, whereby every believer is restricted in the creation of new and progressive ideas, intentions, imaginations, and wishes, and so forth, and becomes estranged from the real facts of life. And maybe next show we can get into some of the bizarre manifestations of being estranged from the real facts of life. I'm going to play a clip here that's kind of fun. It has to do with logic and the structure of reason. And again, teaches much about the power of the thoughts. So let me cue this up. It'll just take a second here.
Logic is a language for reasoning. The word logic comes from the Greek term logos, which means word, but has deeper resonances of intelligibility and ordered thought. Logic is formally defined as the science which addresses the validity of inference and demonstration. The deeper understanding of logic is more nuanced, however, and reveals its enduring appeal to philosophers.
Logic is principally interested in the principles of valid reasoning. It's interested in what makes an argument valid, for example. So it's an attempt to explain in a systematic way as possible what the principles of valid reasoning are.
When wielded by a skilled practitioner, logic is a potent tool for interrogating the world in which we live. Its goal, like that of philosophy as a whole, is to divine the truth of our conceptions of the world, to separate what is fact from what is fiction, the valid from the invalid, and sound arguments from fallacies. Philosophical logic brings the rigor and clarity of mathematics to the language of philosophers.
Today, what we mean by logic is actually a branch of mathematics. When philosophers talk about logic, they mean modern logic, sometimes called mathematical logic, usually called symbolic logic, it's usually called mathematical logic, including set theory, including the theory of computable functions, which is sometimes called, which is the central part, the mathematical part of what's called computer science.
As a tool for characterizing rational thought, logic crosses many philosophical boundaries delving into metaphysics, epistemology, and philosophy of mind and language. It is a tool for working on basic notions like reference, predication, identity, truth, negation, quantification, existence, necessity, definition, and entailment. The origins of logic can be traced back to the works of Aristotle, who lived during the Golden Age of Greek culture in the 4th century BC. His thoughts on logic are spread across 6 works, including the Prior Analytics, the Posterior Analytics, Categories, and On Interpretation, which are collectively known as the Organon. Aristotle wanted to establish rules that would enable Greek citizens to distinguish arguments that are formally valid and correct from those which are invalid and therefore wrong. 2 fundamental principles of Aristotelian logic are the law of non-contradiction and the law of the excluded middle. The law of non-contradiction states that no proposition can be both true and false. And the law of the excluded middle says that a proposition must either be true or false. Aristotle designed his formal logic to be able to determine the validity of an argument regardless of the matter that's being argued. The engine of Aristotle's formal logic was the syllogism, a form of argument with 2 premises and a conclusion, such as, all men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal.
Logic was, for a long time, dominated by Aristotle and his theory of the syllogism. He had what we would now regard as a very simple view of what reasoning was like. So a typical example of reasoning for him would be all A's are B's, all B's are C's, therefore all A's are C's.
A syllogism is discourse in which certain things being stated, something other than what is stated follows of necessity from their being so. I mean by the last phrase that they produce the consequence, and by this that no further term is required from without in order to make the consequence necessary.
In an Aristotelian syllogism, the conclusion is deduced from the premises. If we don't know that Socrates is mortal, then the fact that all men are mortal and that Socrates is a man can be offered as proof that he is indeed mortal. This is a deductive argument, meaning that the conclusion is a necessary consequence of the premises. The beauty of a successful deductive syllogism is that, properly executed, it cannot lead from true premises to false conclusions. Take this example. All trees are plants. All oaks are trees. All oaks are plants. We can formalize this argument by expressing it as all M's are P's. All S's are M's. Therefore, all S's are P's. This argument is formally valid, and its validity is completely independent of the truth of the statements that make it up. For example, take this highly questionable argument. All trees are angels. All birds are trees. Therefore, all birds are angels. Despite appearances, the form of this argument is indeed valid, even though its premises and conclusion are false. Likewise, an argument whose premises are false and conclusion is true can also be valid. All trees are flowers. All carnations are trees. Therefore, all carnations are flowers. The other primary form of logic is induction, which dictates how we can infer from observed events to generalizations we can rely on.
Aristotle didn't only talk about deduction, he also talks about induction. Of course, he doesn't use the Latin word, but induction is a Latin translation of the Greek word he used. And he has a notion of induction. He does.
Okay. I know that got rather involved. But I think understanding that we need to focus on logic and deduction and starting from the general and moving to something specific. As long as we have true premises, then we can reach true conclusions, if A, then B. Example, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. So anyway, it's very important that we use logic and don't fall back on belief, because belief is very, very hypnotic. And when you fall under the influence of belief, not that belief is bad, you can have some healthy beliefs, I'm sure. But generally speaking, if you go down that path, it can lead to some very strange outcomes. And maybe next show I can play some more of those very strange outcomes and very people acting very illogically. I don't have much time left, but let me go ahead and try to play some of this clip here.
No denying some people have prospered handsomely.
Wow!
The pastors themselves, they live like rock stars with huge mansions, private jets, and fancy cars.
Oh, yeah!
But when it comes to opulence, few religious leaders compare to Kenneth Copeland.
Amen.
To show you his house, we rented his helicopter so you can see his 18,000 square foot mansion valued at over $6 million.
He lives in this home outside Fort Worth, Texas. It has beautiful water views and comes complete with a boathouse. But that's not all. Copeland is an avid pilot, and here's his pride and joy, a $20 million Cessna Citation jet. It's the fastest private jet money can buy.
Anyway, when you get out of the realm of logic and you get away from true love, creational, natural love, which understands that you're connected to all things, that there's a coexistence with all plants, all animals, everything, and a balance. There's a balance. Universal consciousness is always balanced. It's neither good nor evil. It's neutral positive. And we should live a neutral positive life. And I love that passage in the Goblet of Truth, which is entitled What the Truth Knows to Say, that explains that rivers, lakes, stones, animals, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth, and rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations. And if you go into the forest, you can see the birds, you can see the trees, you can see, you can listen to the insects as they communicate with one another, because they're all connected. And there's something called the psychic swinging wave, which comes from the spiritual consciousness into the material consciousness. And we also have in humanity a collective subconscious. We're all connected. We're all a part of the tightly woven web of life. And you can understand this through observation and through logic yourself. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a good afternoon.